Off the ball. GAA. The talent in that team and the levels that they can get to, like, we haven't seen it yet. There's so much more in them. Not to make it any worse for you, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome to another of our John Giles Tribute Podcast. This episode focuses on one of the most influential figures in his career, Don Revie. Revie took Giles from Manchester United to Leeds in 1963, and they would go on to have one of the most successful periods in the history of the club. In this episode, Giles regales us with his experiences of the man who most famously clashed with Brian Clough. Enjoy.
So John Giles is with us. Evening, John.
Nathan.
Over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about some of the great managers of the era that you played in, Bill Shankly, Matt Busby, Jock Stein. And tonight we're going to talk about Don Revie, somebody who was a huge influence on your career, who was a fine footballer in his own right, a footballer of the year in 1955, and obviously went on to become a hugely successful manager at Leeds United, winning a couple of First Division titles, FA Cup, League Cup, and the Intercity Fairs Cup on two occasions as well. And we want to get your thoughts and your memories on what he was like as a man and as a manager. When you look back on your life now, John, how influential a figure was Don Revie in it?
Oh, very, very, very influential, Nathan. You know, I went to Manchester United as a 15-year-old and worked under Matt Busby, who was one of the great managers as well, different, obviously. And then I went to Don when I was 22. And that was the time Don was manager at Leeds United, as everybody knows. Had been a player for Leeds United, took over as manager of a second division team that was struggling, Nathan. No, and you talk about the great managers that we're going to talk about. The way I judge managers, the great managers, is what did they take over and what did they leave, Nathan?
Mm.
You know, and if you look at Don Revie, he took over a struggling second division team who went on to win the trophies you just mentioned there. And I think made one of the great teams in English football. That'll be my take on it. From what he took over to what he made was fantastic.
Can we go back to before he even became Leeds United manager and his career as a player? I hadn't realised just how good he was, that he was a footballer of the year and a player that would be right at home in the modern game. He was the sort of number nine who didn't score a huge amount of goals. He was a number nine who actually played in a far deeper role, so much so that this position almost sparked a change in how English football was played.
Yeah, it was different. What they call it, the false nine now, I think, Nathan, and that's exactly what they did. And in those days, they made a big deal of it because he was a midfield player anyway. But the fact is, he wore number nine. You know, in those days, you played in your position. If you were number two, you were right back. Three, you were a left back. Not like today, where you wouldn't be able to tell by the numbers. So Don wore the number nine, but played in a deep position in a very, very good Manchester City team. And he was player of the year, I think it was around that time you mentioned, 1954-55, was it?
Yeah, 1955.
1955, and they won the cup in was it 55 or 56?
56 then, City won the FA Cup.
Yeah. So they were a very, very good team. Some terrific players in it, Bobby Johnson and Bert Trautmann, the German goalkeeper. They were a very, very, very classy team at that particular time. And he was a very, very classy player.
So that role, and it ended up being called the Revie plan of the number nine playing in a more deep-lying role. Mm. Was there somebody then playing further ahead of him, or was he expected to do both jobs, to get himself involved, to be a creator, but also to be at the end of things?
Well, as you say, he didn't score that many goals. No, he wasn't expected to. He was a midfield player in that position. He had a lad called Bobby Johnson, who was a Scottish player, was a terrific player. And they had a centre-forward as well. I can't think of his name at the moment. A lot of good players, but Bobby Johnson was a terrific player, a little guy, played up front, Scottish international. So Dom was a deep line centre forward, as they called it in those days. As you say there, I don't think he scored that many goals, but he made a lot of goals. He was a brilliant distributor of the ball and a good footballing brain. There was a lad called Ken Barnes, played with him in the middle of the year, was a terrific player as well. And they were a good midfield duo, as they called them in those days. But he was a very, very stylish player. Good distributor, good pass of the ball. Saw a good pass in that. And be attractive to watch as well.
He had started out at Leicester and Hull and then spent five seasons at Manchester City in the First Division. Went on to play for Sunderland before signing for Leeds towards the latter end of his career. And went on at a very young age then, at just 33, to become the Leeds United manager. What are your first memories of speaking with Don Revie or meeting with Don Revie?
Well, the first time I met him, Nathan, was when I was on the transfer list. I think I went on the transfer list on a Tuesday at Manchester United, and he came over to see me on the Thursday. So he didn't waste any time anyway. No. And he came over, and obviously he would have had agreed terms on the phone with Sir Matt. And it was just when I was in training, Sir Matt Busby said, Leeds United, I've agreed terms with Leeds United, and Don Revie's coming over to see you on Thursday morning. And that was it.
Had you any choice in it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't have to go to Leeds, Nathan.
Did he have to convince you?
A little bit, but not a lot. My take on it was, I'll judge it when I meet him at a second division team. A lot of people said to me, my father included, what are you doing going to a second division team? When I spoke to Don Revie, first of all, I knew from Christmas to the end of the season, Leeds came with a very, very good run for promotion, Nathan.
Yeah.
They finished fourth, right? So that was a good sign in itself. And the biggest sign was that Bobby Collins was there. Bobby Collins was a great Scottish player who played for Celtic, had a great career at Celtic, and played for Everton for 5 years, and then came to Leeds, I think maybe only the year before. And I knew then that Leeds came with a run from Christmas to the end of the season and finished fourth. So I knew they were doing something right. And I knew if Bobby Collins was there, they had to be doing something very right.
Mm.
So that was the influence. That were the two influences. I'd rather join a second division team at the time doing something than a first division team not doing anything, you know? But when you're moving, Nathan, with any player, it's a gamble.
Mm.
You know, you never know. I would never foresee or foresaw what Leeds United would do over the 12 years I was there. You know, I just thought at the time, because you're taking a chance on it. And I was prepared to take a chance on it because of, I knew he was a new manager. He'd had a good run the year before. And Bobby Collins was there. They were my main reasons that I thought they look like they're doing something.
It's a gamble on both sides, because that was a time when squads were very small and there wasn't a huge amount of money going around the game. So when you brought somebody in, you needed them to deliver. And he seemed to have a brilliant ability to spot talent, whether, you know, it was bringing the best out of Billy Bremner and Paul Reaney, Norman Hunter, or developing younger players like Peter Larmore. He did seem to have a magical ability to spot talent and be able to help it progress.
Oh, definitely. But I didn't know that at that time, Nathan.
Mm.
I didn't know about Eddie Gray and Peter Lorimer and the players that were at Leeds. I knew Bobby Collins was there. So that's what I'm saying. You take a chance. It's a gamble. And from my point of view, it was a great gamble, because when I got there and in time, obviously, the players that were there, Paul Madeley came into the team, Terry Cooper came into the team. Like, there was a few players still already there. Paul Reaney was there. Billy Bremner was there. Norman Hunter was there. But we had a lot of other players that I didn't know about at that time. Like, we bought Alan Peacock, a lad called Jim Storey, Tom Weston, Ian Lawson. They were there. at the time, but I didn't know anything about them.
Well, they weren't, and they also weren't the players that we remember them as now. They were all just starting out. The success was still to come.
Yeah, exactly. And they were good players. We were in the second division. But I think what Don did from the start, he created a spirit in the team and in the club, which was very, very professional. And where he was lucky as well in some days, he played for Leeds, right? At the time, they weren't doing very well at all. Mm. It was a bit of a mess, to be quite honest, Nathan. And actually, he was going to a club as a manager. And the chairman decided, because apparently the chairman was asked what was he like, and he gave him a great recommendation. And I think when he was gone, the chairman thought, well, if he's that good, why am I letting him go?
Right.
So he kept him on as manager.
Yeah.
So Don had a bit of a start. In other words, he knew the players that were there, the players that that he didn't need. Actually, they weren't a good group of players. They weren't, you know, they weren't very professional. And he knew that because he played alongside him. So he got rid of them very, very, very quickly, right? And then got some new players in and then brought the young players in. There was, at that time, Paul Reaney, Norman Hunter, Terry Cooper came into the team. Billy was there already, but was young. So that was the start for him. But he had a player I mentioned at the start that people wouldn't remember now. But he always had, from the start, a good work ethic.
He
got Bobby Collins in as an example on the pitch and off the pitch in training. So he made those things, the discipline, training, the basic stuff to start with. And then, as it went on, Nathan, he created a great spirit in the club.
How did he do that, John?
Well, I played for Manchester United, and this was after the Munich Air disaster, where a lot of players weren't Busby Babes, were in the team, you know. So the spirit went out of Manchester United a lot after the Munich Air disaster, Nathan. So I wasn't used to they didn't have a really good spirit at Manchester United. When I went to Leeds, he went out of his way to have sort of get-togethers with the players and their wives. And that's most unusual in football. It might not be now, but it was in those days. And he created a spirit there that I hadn't noticed, I never saw at Manchester United. And when I saw it first, you know, they had a Christmas do for the wives and the kids and things like that. And I thought, this is a bit odd. I've never seen this before. But it worked. He did get the spirit in the club. He called it a family spirit.
Mm.
And he went out of his way to do that. You know?
So he'd when you'd arrive at training, you know, he'd have conversations about your wife, about the kids, about how things are going at home. He genuinely cared.
He knew the wives. Do you know what I mean? Mm. When I went first there, they had a pre-season do, you know, where they had the directors along in that. And, they just created something that I hadn't seen before, certainly at Manchester United. And he had a lot of young players then that he was bringing into the team eventually, you know, and he called it like a family spirit, which I was a bit sceptical about, to be honest. Being at Manchester United, there was no family spirit there at all, you know. So and that's what he did, and got it going. And obviously then created on the pitch a spirit, Nathan. You know, from day one, when we were in the second division, from day one, there was a spirit about the players on the pitch, home and away. Never give in. You hear them now, what do we call it now, pressing,
yeah.
High press and all that. Like, Leeds were doing that from the time I went to Leeds. In other words, they were very, very difficult to beat from day one. Very, very difficult to beat because the spirit in the team and the work rate in the team, he established that before I got there. But it was very noticeable when I got in the team at that particular time.
Like all great managers, he was very much his own man and he had grand ambitions and wasn't willing to shake things up. Like, Leeds United used to wear blue jerseys, but he decided they were going to wear white jerseys because of the success Real Madrid were having.
Yeah, there was white jerseys when I went there.
Right. that had already happened.
He made that when he took over as manager the previous season. So when I got there, it was white jerseys. That was the ambition he had, and that was the type of thing he did. You know, he was training every day. He was on the pitch every day. Again, when I go from Manchester United, now the Manchester United pre Munich was a different story altogether because he had the best players and one of the great teams of all time and one of the great managers of all time, Matt Busby. But after the Munich disaster, it changed a lot. You know, there was it wasn't the Busby Babes for a long time after that. You know, there was a lot of players that were brought in into the team. You know, for example, when I was after the Munich air disaster, Harry Gregg had been in the team just before the Munich air disaster, but Noel Cantwell came into it, Morris Setters, Paddy Credden, Dennis Law, David Herd. It wasn't the Busby Babes anymore. Do you know what I mean, Nathan? That spirit had gone from the club. He got it back later on, a little bit later on. He brought players like Nobby Stiles and Johnny Aston and Georgie Best into the team. So when I went to Leeds, I hadn't come from a club at that time that had a great spirit in the dressing room, you know?
In terms of what he did on the pitch then and the style of football, and, you know, we've spoken about it through the years of the dirty Leeds tag, how you would feel it was very unfair, that there was definitely a one-in-all-in attitude, that you had each other's back, but it really underestimated the style of football. You talked there about the high press, which I don't think any other team was maybe doing in English football at the time, and his thoughts on the game and how it should be played. And again, a lot of that seems to be judged in the context of Brian Clough and rows they would have had on TV shows. Was he very set in how he wanted the game to be played? Was he very idealistic?
Definitely. I mean, he created his spirit. Again, the high press you see today, I'd say Leeds were one of the first teams to do that in the manner in which we did it. And the amount of work we put into it at that particular time, Nathan.
And was that work, John, was that tactical work or was that fitness work? Because for that high press, as we see with all the great modern team, you need to be fitter than everybody else.
Yeah, well, Leeds were fit. Really, really fit. And they were able to maintain that high press in all the matches, home and away, Nathan. You know, we in those days, you were playing 42 matches. And I think we finished with three losses. We only lost three matches in the team, you know. And there was three teams going up. The Preston was one, and Sunderland were the other. But we topped the league. Now, it would be fair to say it wouldn't have been particularly attractive to watch, especially away from home.
Right.
You know what I mean? It wouldn't have been attractive, but it was hugely effective in what we were doing. We didn't have great players. I mean, Bobby Collins was a great player and a great leader. Bobby was 32 at that time. Bobby Collins was hugely influential. When Bobby played at Celtic and Everton, he put the effort in the way Don expected the young lads to do it. So he was an example to everybody in training and on the pitch. Bobby Collins was hugely influential. But he had willing guys with him, you know, like Don Weston and Jim Storey, lads you wouldn't have heard, Ian Lawson. These were the forwards. And they would run after everything, Nathan. We made it hell for nearly all the teams we played against.
And in implementing that, John, was that Don Revie on the training ground every day leading the training sessions?
Yes. Yeah, Don was on the training ground every day. Every day. And then you had a man called Sid Owen, who had been a terrific footballer at Luton, Footballer of the Year, was one of the coaches, and Les Cocker was one of the coaches' trainers. They'd be there. Sid Owen looked after the young lads. He brought Paul Madeley and Terry Cooper and Norman Hunter through. He did a great job for Leeds. And Les Cocker took the training. But Don would be there every day. Every day, no messing around the training, everything done properly, professionally, and with a good spirit about the whole business, Nathan. And when we played, it was everybody gone, 100%, every match, 100%, 100%. Weren't particularly attractive to watch, but again, hugely effective in the match. We only lost three matches out of 42 to win top of the league, and then. We took that, or Don took that, into the first division. That's where we got the reputation. You know what I mean? Now, it was one of the reasons. I mean, in those days, it was tough stuff, Nathan. It was like you could commit grievous bodily harm without getting a yellow card in those days. So, you know, all the teams, we had the reputation, all right, but all the teams had tough nuts.
How did he deal with that reputation?
He didn't like it because he didn't think we got the credit that we should have got for the matches we played and played well, you know? And that would be true as well, because in those days, as you say, you had, I mean, Everton, for example, Jimmy Gabriel, Sandy Brown, Johnny Morris, I'm only mentioning a couple of names who were tough nuts. I mean, United had Dennis Law, and obviously started Bill Foulkes in those days. Peter Story is at Chelsea, Eddie McCready, Chopper Harris, Peter Osgood. Like all teams had, it wasn't just Leeds. You couldn't get a yellow card. It was very, very difficult to be sent off.
And why do you think then it was your Leeds team that had that reputation?
Well, we came into the First Division, and from day one, Nathan, we were near the top of the league, winning matches. We won at Manchester United, we won at Burnley, we were good teams. And the Leeds team did get stuck in, you know. What happened then as well then, I think the Football Association, after a year or two when we were playing at Leeds, they brought out a list of clubs and with the worst record, you know, of send-offs. Yeah, and
fair play list.
Yeah, but they took the juniors into that particular situation. And our juniors must have been tough guys because we finished top of the sending offs and yellow cards, but it was mostly through the club. It wasn't the first team, you know.
Yeah.
And look at all the clubs. You wouldn't believe it in those days. You had to commit grievous bodily harm to get a yellow card. So we wouldn't lay down with anybody. And when we came into the First Division, we started very well. You know, we won at Manchester, we won at a couple of places. Then we went to Everton in a match that, for the first time, there was a clash, two clashes in the game. And it was the Everton supporters nearly get on the pitch, Nathan, because we had a reputation. But I think the Everton players were there that day to show us who were the real hard nuts. But we didn't back down to anybody.
Hard nuts, but was it true, John, that he hired ballet dancers to teach the players about balance?
No, not in my time.
No?
No, not in my time.
You just blanked it out, maybe.
No, not in my time. No, what happened with Don? Don got a rep. When you're winning, Nathan, you get all sorts of reasons why you're living, winning. Do you know what I mean? And when we became successful, Don got a reputation for, away from home, we used to play bingo, right? Because when you're playing, when away from him, you go home, you go the night before, there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, we used to play bingo. So we got a reputation of playing bingo. And we used to play bowls, you know, the carpet bowls.
Yeah.
Right, we used to do that. So after a while, when we became successful, one of the reasons, according to the papers, that we it used to get... On the players that we were playing against, you know, the players did this and players did that. So there was three things that we did. But when we got the successful, it was put down in the papers a lot that the reason we were successful because we played bingo and we played carpet balls. That happens in football. And then when Don went with the England team later on, they weren't successful. And the reasons they weren't successful, it's because they were playing balls and bingo. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, nothing whatsoever to do with it was just a bit of fun and that. But whatever you do when you're successful, people say that's the reason they were successful. So, and Don was got the credit for that when we were winning the Leeds. And when he went to England, they weren't, and he was blamed for that. But what he did, he created a good spirit, and he collected good players. Honest players in the early days. We had players early on, Jim Story and Ian Lawson and that, down Weston. They weren't top-notch players, but they by God, they had to go.
How did he do that, John?
How did he stayed with the club when we got better players in. You know what I mean? That spirit, that basic stuff stayed with the club as long as Don was there, when I was there.
How did he get the best out of you? Was it an arm around the shoulder? Was it a kick up the backside when needed? What was it that he did that motivated you to become the player you became?
Well, he signed me as a right winger, right? Because I hadn't got on very well with Matt Busby, and when I asked for a transfer, he said without any hesitation, "You're on the list." So but I was always a midfield player, Nathan. But when I went to Leeds, I was playing on the wing, right wing. So he saw me as a right winger, but I knew Bobby Collins was there, right? And what happened to me at Manchester United? I tried to do a job at Manchester United that I wasn't ready for. We played in the semi-final club against Spurs, against Dave McKay and Danny Brown. Thought it's great, Jimmy Greaves, and we got a hiding 3-1. And I was terrible. I had a very, very bad game. And Matt gave up on me. After that, he just gave up on me. He never spoke to me, never said what I did wrong. Anyway, I knew I had to leave, which I did. So I was playing on the right wing at that time. So when Don bought me, he bought me as a right winger. Right. In the semi-final of the cup I played in, I tried to do a job that I wasn't able to do, Nathan. I was only 19 or 20 at that time. I played very badly. So when I went with Leeds, Bobby Collins was doing that job. I played on the right wing. And Bobby Collins, after a couple of years, got injured. And I moved into that position. And I was ready for it at that particular time. So I played on the right wing. And it wasn't like Manchester United. You weren't getting a lot of the ball to your feet.
Mm.
You know, there was a lot of hard work in it, and that was okay. And I did that. And we got promotion, and then we had a very, very good first division. We got the FA Cup final, and we finished runners-up in the league to Manchester United. So that was all part of it. And from my case, I was doing a certain job on the right wing that wasn't the same as Manchester United. There was a lot of tucking in, defending, and all the things that Leeds United did at that particular time.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
He was hugely successful, and I went through the Roll of Honour and the two league titles, but there was also a lot of near misses. There was, you know, finishing second in the first division on 5 occasions, runners up in the FA Cup 3 times, runners up in the European Cup Winners' Cup. How did he deal with losing?
It sounds worse than it was, Nathan, when you read it out like that, right? Because first of all, we won the second division, went into the first division. Now, most teams, actually, I think two of the teams that we went into the first division was Preston and Sunderland. And I think two of them were relegated that following season. We finished runners-up in the league on goal difference with Manchester United. And we got into the FA Cup, right? And we're beaten an extra time by Liverpool in the first season, Nathan. Right now, if you don't get into the cup final, you don't lose. You don't come out as a loser. And when you finish runners up in the league, you could finish up as runners up in the league. But if you take it in the context that it was, Leeds United were pretty much the same players as we had in the second division. Right, get the first team ever to get 60 points or more and not win the league, and get to the cup final and beaten an extra time by a great team, a great Liverpool team. Right, so that goes down in your record as runners-up. But it was a tremendous performance to do that. Do you know what I mean? Because if you don't get to a cup final, you're not runners-up in the cup final. If you don't finish second in the league, you're not runners-up anywhere. You could be fighting relegation. I mean, the two teams that we came up with were fighting relegation. We're going to Wembley. We're getting second in the league, first team ever to get 60 points or more. Like, instead of looking at it in the way, the consistency of Leeds at that time, I think we run the league twice, we'd runners up 5 times or something, And in those days, it wasn't like the top four or the top three. There was loads of good teams that could win the league at that particular time. So what Don did with the players that he had was unbelievable, Nathan. You know, like later on, like we swapped the players that I mentioned early on for Alan Clark and Mick Jones, and then the young Eddie Gray, Peter Lorimer came into the first team. You know, it got better and better and better as we went along. But we were never out of it. We were in the league, in the European competitions for 10 years.
When he decided to leave, John, to take the England job, was there a sense that it was coming to a natural end? He'd been there over a decade, or was there a hope amongst the players that he might even turn down England and stay? Because like it's a group that went on to reach a European Cup final 12 months later.
Yeah, I think if you look back on it, I think he made a mistake, Nathan, as you say. I mean, we just won the league for the second time.
Mm.
Like, he was gone. We got into the European Cup final next year. There was no reason why we couldn't have gone on and won the league again. I think he made a mistake, and I'll tell you why, Nathan. I think when he had the lads for as long as he had, I think he sort of took it for granted a little bit. And going with the England team, I don't think he looked at it in a way that he could have looked at it, in my opinion. Because when he was with Leeds, we had Eddie Gray, Scottish, Peter Lorimer, Scottish, Billy Bremner, Scottish, Joe Jordan, Scottish, Gordon McQueen, Scottish, me, Irish. Like, he had a far better selection of players with Leeds than he had with England. They weren't in the same class. I mean, he had Norman Hunter, he had Paul Madeley, he had Terry Cooper, and he had the lads who weren't English. So he couldn't pick them for England.
Mm.
Like, Leeds' team, the Leeds squad, was far stronger than the England squad. And I think he only realised that when he got the best English players and went in the same class as the Leeds team.
Do you think he realised that quite quickly?
I think so. Because when he went with, like, he'd been with the Leeds lads for years, and he had, and also he had, they were day to day. You know what I mean, Nathan?
Mm.
When you've got a squad in England, as he had with England, you only get those players every so often. It's a different game altogether, Nathan. You know, funny enough, I was manager of the Irish team before he was manager of the England team.
Right.
Now, I'm not comparing myself with Don Revie, but I recognised straight away with the Irish lads.
Mm.
Because in those days, some matches you're only meeting them on the day of the match. So you couldn't do with the international setup what you can do at club level. And Don was a day-to-day man, training, doing this every day. He didn't have the benefit of that. And I don't think he realised that when he took on the England job. He only had them every so often. They're coming from different clubs with different habits. He didn't have the same quality of player. And I think he obviously realised it fairly quickly that he couldn't do day-to-day stuff with an international team. And he didn't have the players. The players weren't as good. The selection of players he had weren't as good as the England lads, because we had a lot of Scottish players, a couple of Welsh lads, and myself, Irish, in it, that he couldn't pick for the England team.
It didn't work out for England, and it still ended in a lot of controversy, even though there was an expectation he was going to leave anyways. He took a big money deal to go to the United Arab Emirates, and it caused a huge amount of damage to his reputation in England. Was money an important factor in his life always?
Yes, I think so.
Right.
I think so. And the strange thing, like in those days, like no player, but he was there in the 20 quid a week. I mean, there was no player, even when the maximum wage was abolished in my time, could retire financially secure, right? And none of the managers could either. I mean, we come to them all in every Thursday, I think, at night, and to talk about them. But they didn't. Don, despite his success at Leeds, wasn't financially secure. because, again, if football is a strange game, I mean, people would assume that Don got on like a house on fire with the directors. I don't think that was the case. There was a lot of resentment, in my opinion, because Don became real boss, because managers, they still do, I think, but in those days had a hard time with directors. Don didn't start off very well at Leeds and had a hard time with them. And when he got on top, I think he was real control of the club, and I don't think he got on very well with them. And the only thing they had control of was his money. And I don't think Don on the 12 years or 14 years he was at Leeds, I don't think Don was financially secure at the end of that 14 years.
For my generation, when we think of that time, Don Revie, it's always alongside Brian Clough, and it's based on the television interview or the movie. And on the one hand, it's the lovable rogue of Clough and the real dour Revie on the other side. When you look at that and people's impression of Don Revie, how do you feel as to how he's thought about now? He died at a very young age. He died at 61 in 1989. But how people look back on that era and look at Revie's place in it, say in comparison to Clough?
Well, first of all, he wasn't dour at all. He had a great sense of humour.
Right.
He was great with the lads. You know, I think he always did what he could for the lads at a time when clubs weren't decent to lads. I think his hands were tied, but he did the best that he could with the thing. I mean, the Clough situation, he didn't handle things well in many cases. I mean, he went on the thing to debate with Brian Clough.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't have gone near him. Shouldn't have gone near him. Brian Clough came into Leeds for 44 days and made a right mess of it. And what he said about Don Revie, well, you didn't win the league in style. This is all rubbish. And this was typical Clough. And I think Don should have ignored it. So he made a mistake there. I think in the way in which he left England was a mistake as well. I think he handled that badly and left it open for people to criticise him. There's no doubt about that. So he made a couple of mistakes in that way. But if you look at the overall picture, I mean, what he did at Leeds over the years, coming into a second division, they were always a second division, maybe a couple of years in the first division, weren't in a football country, Nathan. You know, no support, really. I mean, my first match for Leeds in the second division, I think there was 14,000 at the match. Now, he had to build that up to what he did, to play in Europe and win European trophies from nothing. Nothing. And the way you judge a manager, in my opinion, what did he take over and what did he leave? And if you look what he did at Leeds, I mean, he created a tremendous team, won trophies. Actually, he won as many trophies as Bill Shankly did. And a lot of people forget that because people say, well, oh, you were runners-up and that. But to be runners-up takes a bit of doing as well. So I think he made a few bad choices, I think, going on with Clough on the television. Because Clough was brilliant on the television.
Yeah, he was a showman.
Oh, he was brilliant at it. Don wasn't. And I think he made look Don bad. He made him look bad on that particular interview. He shouldn't have gone on with him.
Did you watch that, John? Like, it's incredible.
Oh, sure.
More than 45, nearly 50 years on. It's still such a seminal moment. Do you remember sitting down to watch it that night?
Yeah, I do. And I thought, because what Clough was saying was, Don says, yeah, but we won the first division. Yes, but you didn't win it in style. You know what I mean? Like, style, what that's supposed to mean? I mean, we played some of the best football you've ever seen later on in Don Revie's career. If you look back on some of the matches, we played Southampton and beat them 7-1, I think it was. And it was exhibition stuff. Manchester United, 2 weeks before that, we did the same to them and beat them 5-0. And that. So Leeds played some fantastic football, but they had the reputation of being a tough team. And that was from the early days. And that was Clough. I mean, Clough come into Leeds, and in 44 days, he ruined the club. He ruined the club. 44 days. You effing lot. As far as I'm concerned, you can throw all your medals in the bin. What a cheek. He never won a medal when he played. I played against him. He was no great shakes. And he's telling us, Norman Hunter, if you'd have been a dog, you'd have been, Eddie Gray, you'd have been a horse, you'd have been put down years ago. This is from a fella, Eddie Gray, brilliant player, who had very bad luck with injuries. Norman Hunter, you're a dirty so-and-so. And I know you'd love to be loved, wouldn't you? Norman says, I couldn't give an F. On to me, Irishman.
Yeah.
All of us, this is the first meeting with a team that had just won trophy after trophy and just finished winning the league. And he's going on telly to tell Don Revy they didn't win the league properly. Don should have, Johnson should have totally ignored him. He lost it 44 days and he was gone. Clough. Don was there for 14 or 15 years winning the league twice, as you mentioned earlier, the Cup, First Cup twice, League Cup. Great career in it. To be listening to Clough, big mouth.
It's very sad that he died at such a young age, and Motor Neuron, I think just 2 or 3 years after he had finished up in management. Did you stay in touch during that time?
I went up to see him, and we did a best. We did our best to organise a testimonial man. We organised a testimonial man, as for us, myself and some of the lads, and he didn't get a great crowd at that, but. He lived up in Scotland, so we didn't see much of him when he was ill, Nathan. You know, we went up a couple of times. We went to his funeral, of course, and there wasn't that many from the football in at his funeral. Nobody from the FA at it, but no, it was very, very sad. I mean, what he did for the lads that played for him. I mean, he was a great manager for us, and. None of the clubs were throwing money around at that time, but he did his best. He did his best to get us what he could, Nathan. So he was a real player's man. There's no doubt about that. I thought, like, he treated the players very, very well, and he did whatever he could for us. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's incredible that no one from the FA turned up at his funeral. I think at the time there was reports that the FA chairman had sent letters to every club saying never to give him a job in English football again. Yeah. And I know, listen, there were various different allegations and things in those latter years about his relationship with the FA, but for nobody to turn up at his funeral from English football, considering what a giant figure he was in the English
game. They treated him very badly. The FA crowd, what a mob they were. Horrible, horrible mob. And he did the best, what he considered to be the best for himself at that particular time. It didn't work out well going abroad and that. Well, he went and did his job over there, but he didn't handle it well. There's no doubt about that. But the FA themselves were horrible. Horrible people generally anyway, and horrible to him. And other managers as well. Look at Ralph Ramsey. Look what he did with him. World Cup winner. Finished up in a home, Ralph Ramsey. These are all things that are not... don't want to be talking about them now, but the football managers and football people were very badly treated, Nathan, up to fairly recently, where there's an independence now for the players financially to do whatever they want, and that's good.
Yeah, I suspect it's going to be...
good. But in Don Revie's day, he didn't have the advantage to do what some of the lads can do today.
I suspect it'll be a common theme, John, over the next few weeks when we are talking about the managers of that era and how they were treated when they left their clubs. But listen, it's been brilliant to talk about Don Revie and to spend the last sort of 40, 45 minutes as to what sort of character he was, but, and how important he was in your career.
Very important. I think he was one of the great managers, Nathan, to do what he did at a period where or a situation in Leeds wasn't... Leeds was a cricket area and a rugby league area, and he turned them into one of the best... soccer centres in the world, really. And you can see the even to this day, the support at Leeds and the passion of the Leeds supporters. Well, Don Revie created that, and it's continued since Don was there.
John, great stuff. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay, Nathan, thanks.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things on a journey through Latin America.
I'm nervous. Police will use tear gas.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers
in Mexico City.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Local, that's me, okay?
Diverted has been named among Apple Podcasts' best so far list of 2025.
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. All 10 parts are available now for free via Apple Podcasts.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.